In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss Neferet, Other Neferet, Spider Neferet, Spider Goddess Neferet, Crazy Spider Mantis Goddess Neferet, Batshit and the Monstrous in the final book of the House of Night Otherworld series, Found, by PC Cast and Kristen Cast, narrated by Caitlin Davies.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss Found by PC Cast and Kristen Cast, narrated by Caitlin Davies.
Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just love us so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Yay! It's the last book in the series.
Yay! Except for not yay. I don't want it to be over. Although I do. I don't, but I do.
I want this bit to be over, this part of the series. But as we have discussed in our previous episodes, please see previous episodes, all of the multiple different fan fictions that we'd love to actually come to fruition. Do you know, I've been thinking about this. Before we jump into the background stuff you found, I was thinking about the previous on our Love, Lost and Forgotten episode where the you said that PC and Kristen Cast had been badging about what to do for the 10th anniversary, and that's, you know, and one of the things was like the anthologies and... Do you know whose story I really, really, really want? Detective Marx and his sisters.
That would be a good story. That would be a good story to have.
So I'm just going to throw that out there while it's on my mind and before I forget. It needs to be out in the ether, because if it's not there, then it won't happen. So there we go. There we go.
Yes.
Right. Do you have any weird background stuff or cool background stuff or just background stuff?
Just general background stuff.
I will accept anything.
So, while I was looking for information, I remembered that while PC and Kristen used to share a website called Infinitely Interesting, that they've recently split into their own websites, PCCastAuthor.com and KCastAuthor.com. So, I thought I would go and check out their websites. And I looked at Kristen's, which led me to discovering that she has a mini story photo series on Instagram called Scarlet. And
I saw a post!
Yes, Scarlet is a sultry assassin, making the world a better place one hit at a time. The photos are so beautiful, and they're taken by Jenny Hanna Roche, and I think that everyone should go and check it out.
I completely
It's infinitely interesting. What?
I completely agree. I was on Instagram the other day and I saw one, and it was it looked like a guy, very Phil Noir actually. It looked like a guy pouring a cocktail, and somebody else with pantyhose and their legs up, and it was like, ooh, this looks very, very, very Phil Noir, and I was going to look into it, but then something interrupted me so I couldn't. So
You should check them out. You can see the photos on her website too, kcastauthor.com, but she has the series on Instagram, and each picture has like a sentence of story that goes along with it. And there it's just fun.
Definitely.
And she's super cute.
I do like those kind of serial stories, and there's a couple of authors that I followed who release serial stories, but just like not as good as that, not like as visual. They just once a month they'll release like a chapter of a book. Mm-hmm. I think that looks really, really cool. It's always good.
This is just like one sentence or two, but the photos that go along with are beautiful, and she's just adorable, and I don't know, they're just so cute. Everyone should go and check them out.
Definitely 100% agree.
Yeah.
So the last book in the series, Amanda.
I know.
We have finally found.
Remember, we were supposed to talk about this a million years ago.
Yeah, but there was just scheduling conflicts, or instead and we covered really, the novellas. And you know what? Actually, I'm glad that we did cover the novellas.
Me too. And really, I think it's a little bit nicer of us that we have given a little bit more time for readers to actually read the book, because...
Well, we haven't done that in the past. With some books.
Yes. With others, we give it approximately 15 minutes and then we spoil it for everyone.
It's a free-for-all.
But not this time.
No, not this time. It was nice to round it off, though, because obviously we've covered the full House of Night original series now. We've covered the novellas, and now this is the last in the series. But actually, you know, I'm really pleased that we ended up covering the novellas, simply because there's information in there that I think is very relevant for people. And it's nice to know, going into this story, that information that is never given in the original or in the Otherworld series. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of like fleshes that out a little bit. And you might have a little bit more empathy or sympathy or vitriol.
Or vitriol. Definitely. Yes.
Looking at you, Dragon Langford.
Yes. Dragon stupid Langford. You know, we should have done the novellas before we started Loved, Lost, and Forgotten.
We should.
It would have made more sense.
We were too excited.
But we didn't think about that.
No.
And we shoved in that novella episode in approximately 45 minutes. It took longer than that. But seriously, that episode was whipped up less than a day. Yeah. Oh, well. Here we are.
So
here we are.
Do you have any initial thoughts? What's your initial thoughts then? That's what I'm trying to get to.
My initial thought is just forever.
Which is awfully similar to mine. Mine was ooh.
What's yours? So excited. I love this series so much. I love the originals. I love the spinoff. I love PC Cast. I love Kristen Cast. I just love all of them. I love everything.
Aww. And
I just love it. I don't know. That's all I have. That's why I don't have words. That's why it was just...
I think Simply Noise is simply fine.
I think so too.
Who needs words?
Nobody needs words. We do, because we're a podcast.
Yeah, we kind of need...
They're kind of required.
Yeah. We also need to look back at the Loved, Lost and Forgotten and discuss that in a little bit of detail and compare our thoughts on our predictions on what was going to happen in Found.
Yes, we do need to do that. And I'm pretty sure we didn't take notes on that. We just spitballed them.
I can remember some of them, it's fine.
I can remember some of them too.
Probably because I repeated it all 6 times.
We did repeat them several times, but luckily for everyone involved, I cut most of those repetitions out when I was editing the show.
Yay! The power of editing. Shall we do it? Shall we do this?
Yes. Let's begin. Other Neferet and Other Lynette arrive in Zoe's Tulsa at Woodward Park. Stark and the Sons of Erebus warriors are there, adding cameras to watch out for humans leaving things for Neferet, and for Spider Neferet, Pretty Neferet, and the middle-aged lady from Aphrodite's vision. Stark and the warriors leave, and Neferet enshrouds the area with fog to conceal herself while she figures out how to release Spider Neferet. Should she be called Goddess Neferet instead of Spider Neferet? Maybe?
Ooh.
No.
I like Spider Neferet as a descriptor.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, Other Neferet can't figure out how to open the grotto and feels coldness and pain when she touches the walls. Way to go, Aurochs! Hey! Woohoo! Doing your job! A group of five human young ladies approach and leave gifts for the goddess. So Other Neferet reveals herself and says she's from a different world there to free spider goddess Neferet. The ladies call themselves the Dark Sisters and are humans pretending to be vampires aligned with the elements. Neferet tells them she and her handmaiden need a place to stay, so they invite them into their house.
Other Kevin and Other Stark have arrived on the Isle of Skye. Kevin can't handle it and is like super freaked out, but Stark is just fine since his family came from Scotland and he is a distant relation to Seorus, just like Zoe Stark.
Hey!
They tell Queen Skia that they want to stop Other Neferet before she can become immortal, or release Zoe's Neferet from her grotto. They swear themselves into her service and are allowed to enter her isle. Skia talks to Orc, who begrudgingly tells her that Neferet has gone into the mirror world, but if they want to go, they'll have to pay a higher price than she did. No.
No, thank you very much.
Skia has another way though. The goddess's realm. If Kevin was connected to Other Aphrodite, may she rest in peace, as she was to him, she should be able to lead them through to Zoe's world. But how do they get there? Other Stark and Other Kevin have to make a sacrifice to the Black Bull for it to carry them to Nyx's realm. Just like when Zoe's soul was shattered, Stark made the blood payment, but will have to sacrifice something important for everything to work properly. Did you see this coming?
Yes, but I wonder, did he actually sacrifice anything?
No.
I don't think anything came from that.
No. Well,
I was really hoping that, like, he would lose.
Was it not just a blood sacrifice?
Yeah, but you know,
to the pain!
When original Stark went to Nyx's realm in the original series, he had to battle his shadow self.
And that was a really good scene.
That was a really good scene, and that was a good sacrifice for him. He had to kill himself, pretty much.
Yeah. Which is part of the whole PTSD and issues that he has.
Yes. But this Stark, I don't think he's deep enough for any of that. So I guess the blood payment was enough, even though it wasn't very important.
No, for me, there just wasn't any repercussions that you could tell throughout the rest of the story.
Yeah.
There was nothing. He never mentioned anything about a sacrifice.
I wish that he would have lost his sharpshooting ability or something. Like, that would be a big sacrifice for him to lose.
Oh, that's
maybe
a good
we'll
one.
See it later.
It could be one of those tidbits that does come back. You never know.
Could be.
Kevin calls Spirit to guide them as Seorus cuts Stark. They are carried to darkness by the Black Bull.
Zoe, Stark, Aphrodite, Damien, and Stevie Ray are reviewing the foggy video from earlier. They see the human women talking to someone in the fog, but they can't see who it is. Damien asks air, but gets nothing. Zoe asks water, but gets nothing. Stevie Ray suggests they ask Casey and goes to get her. Casey arrives and asks water, but feels super weird afterward. Maybe it's because this is the first time she's ever done anything like that. And maybe it's because she felt like the water was being forced to create the concealing spell. She suggests that they cast a spell that will keep vampires away from the grotto because, for some reason, they refuse to believe that it is Other Neferet and they think it could be a High Council vampire, and we all roll our eyes.
Children in charge of a house of night people.
They plan to circle to cast the spell, but without Shailene, who is busy in San Francisco dealing with incels, gross, and Shawnee, who hasn't arrived from New Orleans yet, Casey stands in for water and will boost Aphrodite, who will stand in for fire. After checking that Neferet is still inside, Zoe and the rest create a barrier spell that will keep vampires away from the grotto. Spirit Bison briefly appear, and they all know that the spell has worked. A human approaches the park, telling Stark and the warriors that she likes to walk in the park after dark because the warriors make her feel safe. But they ask her to leave and come back tomorrow instead. Who is this human, I wonder, sarcastically.
At the Vapid Girl's mansion, Uther Neferet takes the best room and gives Lynette the second best, displeasing Vanessa, the owner of the house and the leader of the group. Lynette learns everything she can about why and how Spider Goddess Neferet was entombed. She learned everything that happened in Redeemed and told Neferet, even going so far as to tell her the goddess version was crazy. She wasn't crazy, she was absolutely batshit loco. And as yes. you know, that Spider Goddess Neferet murdered that Lynette.
Yikes.
Yikes. Oh my god.
Yikes.
Hey, Bessie, mate, you realise your reality in this reality, you killed me.
Hey!
Let's do shots. Uther Neferet doesn't care and will return to their world, leaving crazy Neferet to be dealt with by Zoe again once she learns the path to immortality. They go to the park again, and of course, the lady that Stark shooed away was Lynette eavesdropping.
Shocked!
I'll pause for anybody who was genuinely shocked. She told Neferet about the spell to keep vampires away. And clever as always, Neferet will use her tendrils of darkness to break that spell and sacrifice the 5 vapid girls to release Spider Goddess Neferet. Neferet calls the sprites to cause the ice storm, so they'll be hidden at the grotto when they return to set the Spider Goddess Neferet free. She makes the vapid girls watch as she calls the sprites and feeds them her blood. The vapid girls are terrible to Lynette, but she manages them with aplomb. I mean, seriously, she manages them. It's brilliant.
Yes, she does. Oh my gosh, those girls.
Oh. Neferet comes back inside from calling the ice storm and puts those bitches in their place for being so shitty to Lynette. And we all cheer. She can't sacrifice them fast enough, in our opinion. It was possibly one of the best scenes in the book. Thank
yes,
goodness.
It was.
You know, I'm not
yes,
for serial killers, you know. But Neferet is... Other Neferet performed a public service in that scene.
Yes, you can't help but cheer Other Neferet when she sacrifices these stupid girls. They were awful.
It was all the naked pictures around the house.
Oh my god, I know. Oh, they're so terrible. And just Other Neferet and Other Lynette walking around with, like, I can just see it happening. This look on their face like, oh my god, what is this terrible shit that we have walked into?
Like, don't you just totally love us? Like, all of our naked beauty and we're sitting on the back of these horses' bareback. Like, it's totally gorgeous.
No. Oh my god.
No.
Awful. Awful. But I love that scene. I love everything that takes place in that house because it's so awful.
And you just spend the entire time going... Please have to sacrifice them. Please have to sacrifice them. Okay.
Okay. Other Aphrodite greets Other Kevin and Other Stark in Nyx's realm. She guides them through a portal that will take them where they need to go. She tells Kevin that she will always love him and tells Stark to get over his macho douchiness and get a dog.
Yes, Aphrodite!
She also tells Kevin that Aphrodite in Zoe's world already has love and to not be hurt by seeing her. They step through the portal. Meanwhile, in Zoe's Tulsa, the ice storm is becoming an ice apocalypse like last year, and the power goes out. They don't think they need to send any other guards to the grotto. And they are wrong.
Constantly wrong.
Shock!
Uther Neferet reads all Other Lynette's googled information about Spider Goddess Neferet killing Lynette and fills with grief, fear and hatred.
So she does care!
She does.
She cares!
She does! Neferet will not allow Spider Goddess Neferet to harm her, Lynette, going so far as to offer to imprint with Lynette to keep her safe. Oh my goodness. That's huge.
I know.
That's huge.
That is huge. That is completely selfless of Neferet to do that.
And we all
And that is a
cheer,
shocker.
And we all hope.
Yes.
Of course, Lynette is terrified of being killed by Spider Goddess Neferet, and she agrees. Neferet drinks her blood, and the loneliness the two of them always feel disappears as their friendship grows.
Seriously? How upset were you? Reading this chapter.
I texted you.
I know. Oh my gosh.
I texted you and just said, chapter 13, huh?
Why didn't it go farther than it did? I'm so upset.
I'm so shipping those two. I still am.
I know. We should write our own fan fiction about this.
Oh my god. We need to have a fictional hangover fan fiction website. We really do.
We really, really do. I'll just add a tab to our website. All of our terrible made-up fanfiction. Right here. Enjoy!
I'll do it too, you know. Anywho. Oh, I'm just... They're so cute. Now that Lynette is protected, they all go to the park and use the Dark Sisters as a sacrifice. And we cheer and whoop and joy.
Hooray!
The tendrils of darkness gobble them up and go inside the grotto to feed spider goddess Neferet until she's strong enough to break herself free. Shit. What?
Oh.
Ooh.
And here...
An instant regret by all.
Yes. But I am super pleased when spider goddess Neferet breaks free and she is as terrifying as I could ever have hoped.
Yeah.
Her emaciated body is elongated. She's now 6 feet tall with arms and legs that are too long. Her beautiful dark auburn hair is streaked with white and her darkness tendrils are small leeches instead of big, powerful snake-like tendrils. She really is spider goddess Neferet, and I was so excited.
Yeah.
I was so excited that she was actually terrifying. But really, she's probably closer to praying mantis Neferet than she is to spider goddess Neferet.
I think she's a good mix of both. I honestly, at this point, thought of the alien queen.
Yes. Yeah, and I can see that.
Not with all the mouths coming out of each other, you know, and the huge headpiece, but I got that kind of like dark, shiny, acid blood, terrifying image in my head and went, oh no, oh, oh, I like that.
And I went, oh yes, ooh.
And imagine the big bucket of slime that was going to get thrown over you for cosplay.
Oh, it's going to be good.
Because you know, coming out of a grotto of evil, it's not going to be clean.
No, she is not clean. Definitely not clean. Okay, anyway. Enough being super excited.
Stop bantering. Stop it.
She's also, in addition to her giant terribleness, she's also completely crazy and refers to herself in the majestic plural. She is fantastic all around, and I love her so much. Other Neferet realizes she made a mistake in releasing crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet.
Gee, you think?
She won't help, clearly, and she's also crazy and evil. Crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet, this is really too long of a nickname, but I also love it, smells Lynette, recognizes her, and... goes for her. Other Neferet cuts her hand, runs for Lynette, summons Oak, and they flee to the other world just in time.
You could literally feel the oh shit moment of Other Neferet, couldn't you?
Yes. Yes. Can you just imagine like those giant arms like crawling out of the grotto and she's like, oh shit, what have I done?
And they're not jointed correctly. They've got to be like disjointed.
No. She's got to like have backwards bending elbows and knees.
Do you remember the nurses in Silent Hill?
Yes.
It's that kind of jagged, evil movement.
Yes.
Yeah, completely, yes. Completely. And it's like, this all happens in like a 10-second time frame, something like that. From, this is a great idea, let's bring this immortal goddess to life, back to life, find out our tricks, to shit! Get out of here!
Run!
It's amazing how they go from yay to the Cheez-It plan.
Yes.
Love it. So, crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet sends out her tiny tendrils to find where other Neferet and other Lynette have been staying. They find their scent and follow it to the vapid villa. Crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet talks to herself in a mirror as she takes a bath and plans to take over both worlds. As we all knew she would. She will call the White Bull to take her to the other world. And while all this is happening, Aphrodite finally realises that the Lady Stark saw and talked to was other Lynette. And then they finally realise that Aphrodite saw two Neferets in her vision.
Oh my god, finally!
Like, the hamster in the hamster wheel of their brains has mummified in exhaustion. It wasn't just a dropping penny, it was a clang. Anywho. There's a commotion outside and they all run out, thinking it's Neferet. But oh no! No. It's other Kevin and other Stark. Other Stark is arrogant, of course, and wants Zoe. For fuck's sake.
Like, seriously, didn't Spirit Aphrodite just talk to you about this? Stop it.
Grandma Redbird decides to refer to other Stark as James, since it's getting confusing, and we all thank her for that. Grandma Redbird saves the day. Kevin tells Zoe about what happened on Skye and that Skiath has realised that Orc is angry and mean and something's not right about her. Oh, and that they'll lose one day of their life for every day that they're there. So, you know, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Now, are we all caught up with these guys? Yeah? Let's go over to the grotto.
Casey says other Neferet came to learn how to be immortal, but they all know that crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet will never help anyone, even though they do not know that she is a crazy spider mantis yet. They get to the grotto and see the destruction and bones and cloaks from the Dark Sister sacrifice. It's not pretty. They also see a pool of other Neferet's blood and search for her. Aphrodite realizes crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet didn't kill other Lynette, and that other Neferet and other Lynette went back to their world. They also learn that crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet's darkness killed everyone in an apartment building. Nice. This is the crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet that, you know, we've come to expect. We know it's going to happen. She's going to murder everyone.
This is peak Neferet, you know?
But at least it wasn't a church this time.
She's all I'm saying is she's on brand, and I respect that.
Yes. So to make all of this craziness even better, Aphrodite has another vision.
Yay!
This time, they're in Kevin's world. Crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet is there. Though Aphrodite not so affectionately refers to her as batshit, which is not nearly as great as crazy spider mantis goddess Neferet, but it is less of a mouthful. Batshit is battling other Kelowna. Other Neferet and other Lynette are terrified, and they seem to be on Zoe's side? What? Then they run. Batshit kills other Lynette, then slices other Neferet in half with this weird staff-like weapon. Then there is darkness and terror everywhere, and the nerd herd and all of their friends die. Yikes.
The end.
Yikes.
Oh my goodness. Aphrodite really has some harsh visions, doesn't she?
She does, bless her.
Just give her the winning lotto numbers once, anyhow. Clearly, they need to make plans to get to the other world to stop this vision from coming true. Zoe goes to Nyx's temple to pray, but James goes too and kisses her. Awkward. Right, dude. Do I need to sit you down and explain to you again to leave her the fuck alone? You're making me angry, okay? I will rant about this a lot. Leave her alone. This is neither the time nor the place. Read the room, James. Read the room. That's all I'm saying. Read the room. He finally does learn that the people in this world and the other world are different. No shit, Sherlock. James struggles with liking Zoe, even though she's not his Zoe. But you know what, dude? Zoe wasn't even your Zoe. You don't get to have a Zoe. Deal with this. You didn't even meet your Zoe. Right, okay. Calm.
You don't have one. Just shut up.
Breathe. Thank you. Luckily, he does learn to forgive and forget and let go. And we start to breathe and think, thank goodness for that. Or Nick's come down and bitch slap him, please. Anyways.
I wish.
Then he runs into Casey and immediately likes her. Oh. They do go on a date to have dinner, which is nice.
How did they just go from one person to another just like that?
Do vampires have additional hormones or something?
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't understand
I don't.
I was never that teenager.
No. At the council meeting to prepare for the final showdown, Grandma Redbird talks about that poem about Kelowna from the other world that was almost exactly like Cremisha's poem about this world's Kelowna. Other Kelowna is good, however, and never fell from Nyx's side. They decide that other Neferet is neither foe nor friend, which is a line from the poem, and that Casey has to go too, as fire and water, also mentioned in the poem. Casey, with her vague, I know something is going to happen pseudo-prophetess abilities, knows that the circle is there at the showdown, plus Darius and Rafame. Zoe realizes how to get to the other world by using their own goddess-given abilities to open a door, which is fantastic because of the whole old magic is terrible thing that's been going on. Lenobia requests that Darius stay to protect the House of Night, and Zoe agrees. She and Stevie Ray go to work on creating a spell that will open their other world door. James and Casey get on well, and Aphrodite and Kevin are left awkwardly together. They talk, which helps heal Kevin's broken heart. Thank goodness.
So while the Nerd Herd are making their plans, Batchet is planning things herself. She is going to call sprites to learn things. She sacrifices the one warrior left at the grotto.
I seriously thought it was Darius. And my hopes were like through the roof at this point because... As we talked about,
yes,
that was one of my things that I said that I would hope would happen. And I so thought he was dead. And I was like, oh my God, I was right. I wasn't.
Can I just confirm? Were you happy he was going to die because you're not bothered by Darius? Or happy that he was going to die because you thought your prediction was going to be right?
That second one.
Okay.
I thought I was going to be right and I was wrong.
Darn it.
I know.
Anywho, it's not Darius. Several sprites show up and Orc tells her everything she wants to know about the other world. Another sprite is there in the background, but she didn't participate in Orc's divulging of all the important information. It was wee Denise. I love Denise. I love wee Denise. At the same time, other Neferet and other Lynette are talking about buying an island and ruining it to escape all this terribleness. That sounds delightful, by the way. After they help defeat Batchet, they will retreat there and live peacefully. Sounds perfect, doesn't it?
It really Neferet does. Neferet
then gives an offering to Wee Denise because she misses her friend and feels bad that she died for nothing. Wee Denise arrives and tells her that Batchet is coming for them and that she is the friend of four part of the poem they found to release other Kelowna.
Zoe talks to Skiath and learns that old magic can change you, but not always negatively. Maybe that's what is happening to other Neferet. Skiath tells them that they have to go to the other world soon to stop what is happening. She invites Zoe and all her friends to come to her island when everything is over. She's going to open up the island again. Like, finally, really. They kind of talked about it at the end of the original series. That she was going to open it up. She's going to let Zoe come and learn how to be a queen. And then...
I mean, to be fair... That didn't happen.
It's only been...
That was only 2 weeks.
It's only been a few months. Yeah, it hasn't been that long. But anyway, she's finally going to do it. She's going to open up the island again, and it's going to be great. Zoe and everyone going to the other world walk to the spot by the east wall tree. All the students are there cheering them on. Zoe invokes the most powerful form of each element and opens a starry rainbow door to the other world. Anastasia greets them as they arrive. Other Kevin and James will wait until they leave to call Spirit Aphrodite to take them back.
Batchet and her tiny darkness tendrils drink a bunch of people and call the White Bull by burning the bones of humans and vampires. Party!
She just keeps getting better every time we see her.
Stop having aspirations of evil, you. I can see you writing down all these hints and tips. He appears and takes her to the other world. He gifts her a staff with two blades at the end, representing her rule of the two worlds. And we know this staff, don't we, from Aphrodite's vision? Ooh. Ooh. Then the White Bull leaves. She arrives in the Otherworld depot tunnels and finds other Dallas and several other vampires who long for war. They go to find the guns that other Neferet had been gathering and prepare for battle.
The Zoe group has a giant council meeting and then split up to prepare. Kevin runs into other Shawnee, who is trying to light a candle because she's upset about Aaron being a hoe bag with Dallas, who is, and I quote, a bag of balls. If that's not PC's way of using wiener bag, I don't know what it is. Kevin tells her that she has an affinity for fire, and she lights the candle with it. They get along very well, and they have dinner together. Aww. They all meet again in Anastasia's office. Kevin comes in late with Shawnee and announces that she has an affinity for fire. Oh, hooray!
Yay!
Everyone is pleased. Then, other Neferet and Lynette burst in. Neferet tells them to calm down because they all want the same thing, to kill Batshit. And that they have to free Kelowna to do it. And she has to be a part of that. And that she's gonna leave them all alone when it's over. And now, finally, it's time.
They cast a circle similar to the one that released Kelowna the first time. Neferet is impressed, but then Stark shoots her with an arrow. I mean, fair play, but, you know. Anyways. I mean, don't worry. It's not an elaborate plan to kill her. No. It's what happened.
So great.
It would have. It really would have. But they have to do the same that happened in the first time at the Cast the Circle. Way back when Stark was still without his humanity and he almost killed Stevie Ray. Neferet is hurt and angry, obviously, but Zoe promises to keep her safe. Lynette is also hurt by their imprint, but she'll also be okay. When the circle is finished, instead of the tree on the east wall of campus dying when Kelowna comes out like it did the first time, it blooms. They catch other Kelowna up on everything, and he prepares for battle. Then Batchet, renamed the Monstrous by the other Neferet, yes,
best nickname,
yes, she comes with her army. It's a much more mature name, I find. Well thought out. Considered.
Yes, I prefer it.
Obviously, somebody who's well educated and, you know, experienced in the world. Anywho, they use the guns other Neferet had hidden in the field house and are winning the battle. Dang! Other Neferet calls her tendrils, who now have beautiful golden eyes, to fight the Monstress's tendrils. Kelowna and the Monstress fight and are evenly matched. Aphrodite realises that the circle is there to protect Lynette so that Neferet can battle the Monstress. They vow to keep Lynette safe for High Priestess Neferet. Ooh, which they're all calling her now, because she has just been forgiven by Nyx.
Oh my gosh.
And she joins the fight. This is huge.
This is huge. Yes.
So, just like when Stark had to fight his shadow self in Nyx's world when Zoe was shattered, Neferet faces her shadow self and gets her to admit that she's tired and wants everything to be over. Then she stabs the Monstress with her own jewel staff given to her by the White Bull. The monstrous pulls Neferet onto the other side of the spear to kill her.
No! Kalorna takes... I don't want her to die! Come on!
just have a small paper cut. You know, she's got to be defeated in some way. Kalorna takes her away to safety as she is dying.
No!
I mean, we're all upset. We're all upset that, you know, the monstrous is dying, but, you know...
No, I'm not upset about the monstrous dying. I mean, I am because she's awesome, but I'm upset that Neferet is dying. She was just forgiven by Nyx. And now she's dying? Come on.
She's just been forgiven back to Nyx, so it does mean that she's not going to be going to like some kind of hellscape for the rest of eternity.
Yes.
And she has done some bad stuff.
I guess.
But we're not finished yet.
That's right! We're not finished! Aphrodite runs to them and grants Neferet another chance!
Hooray!
Woo! And then Nyx joins them!
What?!
What?! Oh my gosh! She grants almost all of them with lovely gifts. She resets the soldiers of the monstrous's army as children again. She changes other Shawnee into a fully-fledged vampire. She tells Raphame that he has paid penance enough and grants him a full red vampire mark so he and Stevie Ray can be together for a long, long time.
Oh, we all swoon!
She tells Kevin that she is proud of him, and James, too. She gives Casey the choice to stay in that world with James as its prophetess. Finally, she goes to Neferet. She resets her and makes her Emily Wheeler again with a fledgling mark. Holy shit. Emily is joyful and wants to go home, but she doesn't know where that is. They all tell her that she is home at the House of Night. Then Nyx makes Lynette a vampire too, so they can be together forever. It is so perfect. The next day, Zoe, Aphrodite, Stevie Ray, Raphame, Damien, and Stark are about to go home when Kevin calls Zoe over. He takes her away to be greeted by fucking other Heath.
I hate that guy so much. I don't care which world it's in. I fucking hate that guy.
The only way I like Heath is when he becomes Aurochs.
The only way I like Heath is dead.
But when he's dead, he just keeps fucking coming back to life. They keep running into each other.
Yeah.
Anyway. Zoe and other Heath part as friends, though not before kissing. Anastasia asks them to come back and visit and suggests they use their affinities to open the door again. But then Emily says she wishes she could help them go back and forth in an easier way. And wee Denise appears!
Yes!
She answers Emily's call to help freely because, in addition to resetting her life, Nyx also gave Emily an affinity for old magic. The end. For now. Holy shit, what a good ending.
Oh my goodness. That was a neat bow for me. That was a neat bow.
It was so great. Everything about it was so great. So great. I can't handle it. I don't even have words. How are we even going to talk about all of this? Because we also have to talk about
what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. And we got to talk about this book. Just, holy crap. It's a lot.
It is. But I think the joy is of doing the way that we do the summaries. You get a lot of impressions from that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we do tend to yell a lot, don't we?
it, I don't think it's shouting or yelling. I think it's more
exclaiming.
Healthy.
A healthy expression of emotions.
Yeah. We either say it or we don't.
If I didn't shout things all throughout these summaries, I'm pretty sure that I would physically combust. Or just explode. And then you would have to do the podcast by yourself.
Oh my goodness me.
Because I would be exploded.
I mean, to be fair, you're still goo off some of the interviews that we've had.
It's true, I am. And I probably will be later.
Have you got the bucket handy? So you can just melt into the bucket. Yeah, just so you can melt into the bucket and at least Kate retains some form of Amanda shape. Or you could get one of those giant gummy bear molds and just melt into there, and then you could be gummy bear Amanda.
Yes, I could do that. I need to invest in one of them.
You do. Okay, right. Have you calmed down a little bit from
maybe
the summary? And enough to dive into this a little bit.
Maybe.
Goodness gracious me, what a way to end a series.
I know.
Do you know, so I good. Really love the conciseness of the Otherworld books.
Yes. Yeah, I love it.
Well, it's something I said all the way through the original ones. It feels more like a TV series, and we still know that TV series that is in development is stuck in pandemic development hell. But these books kind of redeemed a little bit of that for me and turned them into actual novels.
Yes.
They were much more concise. Everyone had a very definite storyline, definite arc. It flowed much better. It was tighter and I liked it. I liked that a lot.
Yes. Yes, but I can't imagine this being spread out because it's about the same amount of stuff that happened in these four books as in the original 12.
It's probably the same length of time that takes place in those books as the
original 12. No, come on. At least those lasted for a few months. This all takes place in, what, a week?
Yeah, probably around about that.
Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm really going to sit down and write the definitive timeline. I'm going to do it. Please. I don't know when it's going to show up in the world, but I am going to write the timeline of this series.
I mean, you have doodled it. You've sent me pictures of a doodle before. But yeah.
I have. I'm actually going to do it this time.
Excellent.
So let's finally talk about it. And we have to talk about all of it. The entire series. Because we didn't do it after we spent 2 hours talking about the first three books in the series. Just summarizing them.
Has it overlapped the Diviners episode? Have we created Maybe. Some kind of summary paradox?
Yes. Yes, we have.
Excellent. Okay, super fan Amanda. Tell me your favourite moments. Talk me through them. Fine detail. Tooth comb them for me.
Okay, so my favourite moments from the entire series. From the entire spin-off series, excuse me.
Yeah, get your facts right, missus.
I really loved when Aphrodite got her new mark and realized that she didn't have to become her mother.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite from the first book. That was such an important scene for her. You know, she had just quit the House of Night. She was shambling through the streets. And she's met by Nyx. And she's like, hey, you don't get to quit. I'm giving you this mark. You're a full vampire now. And you're a bridge between worlds. And you're going to have your mark. And it's the first red and blue mark ever, which was also really cool.
Yeah.
But it was also great that she was going to, like, as she gives people these second chances, which she also has the ability to do now, which is very, very important, as we just saw with the last paragraph of this book, with that ability to give second chances, which we talked about in our predictions, too. She gets to give Neferet a second chance, which changes everything. It's amazing. And but then she's going to give away a few more second chances, and then she's going to be human again. Like, that's just, I love it. It's really cool.
I always feel sorry for Aphrodite. I don't know if that's the right term, but I always feel sorry for Aphrodite because she's never known exactly where she fits.
It's because she doesn't fit anywhere.
She doesn't.
She is in between.
She is Aphrodite. And I do like her getting the jewel mark and being the bridge, because that means she's completely unique because she's Aphrodite.
Yeah. She has to be completely different from everyone else.
She does. She is unique. But then I also think, how strange would it be when she gives that last person a second chance and goes back to being human again? A lot of Aphrodite's storyline for me is being wrapped up in the fact that she doesn't feel like she has a place. She's never felt comfortable with the nerdhood because she's not been the nerd. I mean, obviously that does develop and she finds her place, but you know, until Eren leaves, Aphrodite doesn't get properly comfortable in it, in the nerd herd, because Eren is a horrible negative person. She's the one who drives the bullying of Aphrodite. You've seen how much of a hag and she is, and it isn't until Eren's gone that Aphrodite starts to be a bit more comfortable in the nerd herd. But she's also human. But then she is a prophetess of Nyx. And then finally she becomes, you know, this bridge. But she's never been... She's a jigsaw piece that never had... That's never fits. She's that one piece.
She's just special. She's just special in all ways.
I get that. And it must take such a strong personality to be able to cope with that.
Yeah.
And her coping mechanism was drugs and alcohol, and seeing the way it destroyed her mother and realizing, I do not need to be that person, that hateful, hateful person. It was wonderful to see. Absolutely wonderful to see. I was just thinking, you don't really, you know, Aphrodite's parents play a part in making her who she is in the original series, but I don't think you realize how much until this one it's affected her.
Yeah. Well, her mother's just awful.
Oh, God.
Let's make Tulsa strong again. No.
No.
Shut up.
No. Take your Xanax, love, and go over there.
Yeah. Jeez. Go get zombified.
Yes, please. Okay, next favourite thing. I'm hoping this caught completely to you, by the way, because I'll probably end up latching onto some of yours, so I'm opening this forum up to you.
So another favourite part that I had was the whole scheme between other Neferet and other Lynette to murder Lauren Blake.
Yeah!
I loved when Neferet calls him.
Best phone call in literary history.
You can just see them. It's like two high school best friends giggling, talking to this guy who they think is an idiot. Like, you can just see them mouthing words to each other like, oh my god, this guy's so stupid. I hate his guts out. How terrible is this guy? But they convince him as he's spouting Shakespeare to come to London and be and be murdered by Neferet. It's fantastic. Oh my gosh.
Which is actually another justifiable murder on Neferet's part.
Yeah, man, that guy deserved it so much.
Oh, God.
Ugh.
You can imagine, you can imagine throwing the L for loser sign, can't you?
Or yes. Like
moving their hand in a very suggestive manner to say, he's a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah. And just everything that they're doing during that conversation is great.
And Neferet's like, oh god, I can't believe I did this guy.
Ugh.
I have boyfriend regret.
Yes. And then she kills him.
And it's so satisfying.
That's great. And we all cheer.
The only thing that would have been better is if she'd burnt him as well for me.
That would have been good. But if she did that,
that carpet would have been even more ruined than it already was.
Yes, and they probably would have caught up with Lynette since it was her credit card used to book the room. that probably would have had some negative repercussions. Although, how having a murdered corpse in your room does not come back on you negatively, I don't really understand.
Well, there
won't let's just not worry about that.
Yeah, but there's not going to be video there's going to be video evidence of Lynette not being there at the time of the murder.
That's true.
So Lynette's fine. I mean, she paid for it, but she's going to be under a little bit of a, you know, she might be an accomplice.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter now because she's a vampire and she's in America.
Yeah, that's right. She's a vampire. She's
in Tulsa. She has got the number one extradition treaty FU loophole. She doesn't need to go to Mexico. She just needs to get a crescent moon on her forehead.
Yes.
Can I throw one in here while we're talking about justifiable murders?
Yes.
Those silly little girls who worshipped the monstrous evil spider mantis Neferet and had all those naked pictures of them around their villa.
That place was so terrible.
Oh, God. Just, I adored the scenes when they're walking around and Lynette and Neferet are like, what the hell is this?
But they also had to pretend that they were pleased by it. Can you imagine staying in Vanessa's room, like, sleeping under her nude portrait?
No.
I wouldn't want to do it.
I would be, like, putting, like, clothes, like, shawls, or... I would be putting things over the pictures. Or if I, or taking them down and burning them. Or selling them for a small fortune on eBay. Just, it's awful. And they're awful. And the way they treat Lynette is awful. It's like, you're like a servant? And she's like, no, I'm the handmaiden. Uh-huh. So you're like, and nothing? It's like, treat me with some respect, bitch.
Oh, and they called her Nettie? I would just strangle them for that. Fucking call me by my name.
Oh my goodness me. And then all the way through, you're just like, they're going to be sacrificed. They're going to be sacrificed. Yes, they're sacrificed. Bye-bye.
Yes.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Here's my tendrils of darkness. Nom, 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 nom. So yes, I hated their vapidness. I hated their vileness. And I enjoyed their deaths. I had to get in with that one.
Yes, that was excellent. We did talk about it a little bit during the summary.
We did, but it bears repeating.
It had to be said again.
As did the scene in which Spider-Man Mantis Neferet emerges from the grotto in all her sticky, gooey...
Yes.
Horrible, haunted goodness. Goodness?
Yes. I loved
deliciousness.
I loved every single bit. About the monstrous Neferet.
It was hugely aesthetic and so tactile, the description. It was great.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was hoping for.
You can imagine the... Can you imagine, like, the chittering and the clickering and the scuttling?
Yeah.
Creepy ass. Yeah, that was really, really good.
Love it. I also really liked the ending. It was a perfect ending.
It tied it up nicely. I did think there was going to be a Lynette or Neferet death. I thought that was a distinct possibility.
Nope.
But obviously that didn't happen.
And they learned that the Tesai Sagili, as what the monstrous Neferet was a demon, and they could kill her, which is good, instead of trapping her. So then she's dead. And they had to convince her that she had to, like... You know, they kind of, like, tricked her into giving up, kind of. And then she says that she wants it to all be over. And then she dies. And then other Neferet also gets stabbed. And all of it, just that whole ending, so good.
Lynette turning into a vampire by Nyx, that was good. That was interesting. I like that.
Yes, I was so happy that she didn't die this time.
She's the one character I was like, oh, please let her live. I'll give her a chance.
Yes, please.
Original recipe Lynette, I could do without. I'm not bothered by original recipe Lynette. But I do like other Lynette. They are two very, very different Lynettes, though. They were very, very different.
Yes, they are two very different, very different Lynettes. And that's fantastic. Do you know what I hated?
Wow.
In the entire series.
I've got a list, but yes.
I hated, more than anything that ever happened, was Jack suggesting that they sing My Favorite Things.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Hated that scene so much.
Do you know what I had to do? I literally stopped listening to the audiobook, skipped back, and re-listened to it to go, did I just hear that right? Oh no.
There is no way ever humanly, vampiringly possible that My Favorite Things is better than Queen.
No.
Terrible idea. I hate Jack. I hate other Jack. I'm so glad that they kind of like phased him out. You're like, oh, we don't want to bring him along. He can't be around Neferet. He can't see Neferet because he'll get scared. Don't bring him along. Like, just completely leave him out of everything, please.
Yeah, his lack of being there was one of the best things in Found.
Yes. Yes.
Whilst we're talking about Jack.
Ugh.
Yoga teacher Jack. Swimming coach Jack. Jack being Jack.
I will say that I am glad that Jack was able to come back so Damien would be happy. But that is the only good thing
I concur
about Jack is Damien's happiness.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly with that. I have never been a Jack fan. There's been nothing in his character that has ever won me over, apart from the fact he makes Damien happy, and that's it. That is literally it.
Yep.
I don't want him to speak. I don't want him to do anything.
Him to make origami?
No. No. No, 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 no. Everything about Jack, I hated. And Jack. I can't get with, let's talk about Heath for a minute.
No, we have to.
Just a minute, because then I want to, like, stab him through the heart with a stake, chop his head off and bury his corpse at a crossroad. In Salted Earth. In the first books, when you start talking about the other one, so in Loved, when you realise that other world has other Heath, and that Zoe is going to go to the other world, and you think, other world, Heath's going to be there. Are we going to go back to square one with this annoying, pointless love triangle? Please say we're not. And then it didn't really happen. She saw him for a distance. She said some hateful things about him being with somebody else, one of the cheerleaders on the football team, but they didn't meet. And then Heath was forgotten about for a while. And it was glorious. Yes. And it was lovely. And it was perfect. And then all of a sudden, Heath turns up at the end of Found. And I'm screaming at the book saying, don't you fucking dare let him come back. I can't take it if Heath came back. So having that little bit of a kiss makeup, like that letting go of each other in the present was fine and I was okay with that, but the threat of Heath coming back was making me physically angry. You know I get angry about Heath. I get Heath rage. I know I hide it well. I do. Okay. I hide it so well. I'm so subtle, but that
you're
scared
so
me.
Subtle about it. Hated Heath. Yes, of course, I hated Heath. But I also hated how jealous Stark gets of Heath, especially in the first few books when Zoe is going to sit by his grave.
Yeah.
That really bothered me.
It did.
That he was getting so worked up about her going and sitting at Heath's grave and talking to Heath. Because really, it hasn't been 13 years that it took the series to come out.
No.
For Heath to be gone. He's only been gone for a very short amount of time. And even though I hate his guts out, he and Zoe had such a strong relationship since they were in the third grade. And then he died. And so, of course, she's still dealing with his death, because it hasn't been 13 years. It's been a couple of months.
Exactly. I mean, at the beginning of Loved, it does say that it happens a year later. However, after the events of the original series, however, it starts like 2 days before Zoe's birthmas, which happens in book one or book two of the original series. So it's not even a year. It's not a year.
No.
That time scale is wrong. And again, one of my least favourite things is the bad time scale. You need to get yourself onto that because it needs to be sorted out.
We know that it started roughly in October. And now it's the next December. And they say, you know, all this stuff took place about a year ago. But really it didn't, because I believe they got pushed into at least February.
At least.
In the first series, in the first 12, it was October to February-ish. So really February-ish to December. And Heath died in January, so it hasn't been a year.
No, it
that
hasn't
Heath has
been
dead.
That long
and they've
at all.
They've been in love for forever. And even though we hate his guts out, Stark needs to let her mourn. He can't be so insanely jealous. And I remember through the whole first series how much I liked Stark, because he's a lovable asshole. But he's just a little bit too selfish for me, especially thinking about how much time has actually passed and that she still needs to be able to mourn him.
I wonder how much the authors were like thinking about other Stark and then unconsciously putting some of his immaturity and douchebagness and possessive ways onto a crispy chicken original recipe Stark by accident. Yeah. I wonder if that kind of happened, because the other thing is, original Stark developed a friendship with Heath and an understanding. And I don't think that Heath, at the end of the original series, would be jealous of Zoe going to his grave to mourn and talk and just have those quiet, peaceful moments away from the House of Night with somebody who is not in that sphere anymore. And I wonder if there's some kind of like cross consciousness taking place accidentally in that part. I think Zoe not telling Stark that she's been going to Heath's grave, I can understand her being upset about that.
That's what I was going to say. And I think that it's that Zoe is going to Heath to talk about her problems when he's not actually there and he can't actually help her. But Stevie Ray can help. And Stark can help, and Aphrodite can help, and like she's surrounded by all of these people who can help her figure out what's going on in her life. But she goes back to Heath to talk to him about it, which is, I think, where most of Stark's jealousy comes from, in that she's just not talking to him.
It's worry as well about her safety. He is her warrior. He needs to know where she is to make sure that she's safe physically and emotionally. And that's the other thing. That was the thing throughout the entire original series. They completely lacked communication. And this, again, is a bleed on from the original series, where Zoe doesn't know how to communicate. She doesn't know how to be open. She doesn't know how to share. She hasn't learned anything. And again, this goes back to my whole, how is she controlling an entire school? How is she being a teacher when she hasn't learned any lessons herself? And her maturity level, I don't get it. It's the same with, how can Jack be a teacher? He has no... He's 16 or something ridiculously young. You can't do that. You have no training and no experience. You haven't graduated. They wouldn't graduate the basic human educational system. Never mind the vampire. This really bothers me. And it's because I know people in academia. I'm surrounded by academia at the moment. And the difficulty of people finding like teaching jobs, and all they have to do is survive into being a vampire, which is, you know, it's harsh. That's difficult. Not exactly a test you can train for, though, is it? You could die, but it's not a test you can train for and pass and then go, you know what, actually, you're shit hot at history. You're really good at English language. You are a geography professor in the making. You have all this knowledge. Now impart it to the world. No, no, no. All you've got is a full crescent moon on your forehead. Have a professorship.
I don't like that. It's an
insult to me. It is an absolute insult.
I really wish...
It bugs me so bad.
I wish that they had let Zoe be... I mean, if she wants... If they want to create their own American High Council, whatever, that's fine. I think that she shouldn't be a leader of that. But because of the fact that she has an affinity for all five of the elements and she's done all of this stuff, that does make her very important. But it shouldn't give her the qualifications to be the leader of the school and the leader of the High Council. Like, that just doesn't make sense. I wish that she could be there with all of, loosely said, knowledge that she has obtained throughout this period. But let Lenobia lead.
I would almost say
someone who's already been there.
Lenobia, who is, you know, as we found from the novella episode, she's 200 years old and she's been a teacher for a long, long time. She's the headmistress of the House of Night. But she's not head priestess, but she's headmistress of the House of Night. She controls the administration, the faculty, and then you have the High Council, which is Zoe. And Zoe is learning the tricks of the more practical trade from Lenobia. So she kind of has an apprenticeship going on. That makes more sense to me.
Much better.
And I have to put that in my head because otherwise I just rage. And I know it's stupid. I know it's a work of fiction. But you can't help but let these things bleed in from real life. Like, you know how we've covered so many books lately that have been like so spot on with what's going on in the world. It's depressing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that again. It's one of those where it's like, this is too real that I needed to actually be more accurate and not more 17, now 18-year-old ruling the entirety of the country. I would have loved to, like, you know how there's the North American Council now? I would love to have seen something. This is why I would have loved that anthology, the perspective of other vampires and how things have changed and how they're accepting this new rulership. And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, by the way, San Francisco, I'm your leader now. I've basically staged a coup. don't talk to the Italians anymore. You know, you talk to me in Oklahoma. Come to Oklahoma if you want anything. And I would love to know how that is taken, how that is understood. Because you have the potential, and I get this from the novellas and, you know, from the original series, that the High Priestess is in charge of the other House of Knights throughout the United States. They're all have a certain... They've been alive for a while, you know. They've got at least 50, 100 years, 150, mm-hmm. 200 years under their belt. And then here comes a little 16-year-old and go, hiya, I'm a fully-fledged vampire and I'm part of Zuri's Circle. I'm in charge now! What?
I'm in charge. Deal with it. Like, no.
I can't see it. And I know this is ridiculous and it's awfully practical and it's probably too much of a reality, but I kind of need that in there as well. I need that little dose of relatable reality.
Yes.
So, okay. Getting back to things that bugged me for funny reasons.
Why?
Hey, Amanda. I've got some brown pop in Game of Thrones, and I'm wearing your old, dirty, holy shirt. Shall we have a hot date on the floor?
Eating nachos.
Ooh.
Feed you nachos. Take this and Dr.
jalapeno
pepper.
And oh, cheese.
I hated that. It was so bad.
How messed up was it? How absolutely messed up was it?
Yeah,
It was just so wrong and so nasty. And I enjoyed Game of Thrones. And you know what? This may come as a bit of a shock horror to people. I actually quite like Dr. Pepper.
But you hate brown pop.
I am not a fizzy drink fan. I can't actually tell you the last time I had a Dr. Pepper. But if it is offered to me as the like only drink that's there, I will enjoy it. And I felt really physically insulted by that entire date. And I'm a massive, massive dork. And I can totally relate to like having those kind of like quiet night in dates, because, you know, if you want to have a date night and you don't want the child to sleep over anywhere, then that's what you do, you know? You eat nachos and you watch Game of Thrones. But it was just nasty and wrong and I didn't like it. Yes. It wouldn't go away fast enough.
Yeah, that was a super awkward scene. I guess I should take it back, because that's like all of the dates that we ever have in my marriage.
What, Dr. Pepper, Game of Thrones, and nachos on the floor? Oh, can you please wash Jacob's shirt once in a while before you put it on there and it's a sexy man?
We'll stitch up the holes in the shirt before I put it on. With nothing else underneath. Like, come on. That was just silly. I think I have one more thing. No, I have a couple more things that I hate. But this episode's going to be 14 days long. It bothered me to no end that they did not realize that Aphrodite's vision that she had flickering between the pretty, beautiful Neferet and the terrifying spider goddess Mantis Neferet was two different Neferets. Like, freaking come on. You know that there are two versions of people floating around. You've met other versions of yourself. Like, or some of the characters have. There's two Neferets. Why do they not realize that immediately? So frustrating to me.
Because,
and I also hated that they called spider goddess Mantis Neferet. Did I miss one? Crazy goddess spider Neferet? I don't remember. But I hate that they called her batshit, because I don't like that name. And I'm so glad that other Neferet came in and was like, no, I'm gonna call her the monstrous. And
crazy spider Mantis goddess Neferet. I really want a t-shirt now that just says like Neferet, other Neferet, goddess Neferet, spider goddess Neferet, and just starts listing them down until you get to the end, and then it's just monstrous.
Yes, I can do that. Like one of those, like one of those shirts with all the names.
Yeah, except it's all the names of Neferet.
Neferet.
Yeah.
I can do
yeah.
it.
Nice. No, I agree, but then this, again, it harkens back to the fact that they're still children. And it harkens back to the fact that, again, we've said this on multiple occasions, on multiple episodes, we do not see any level of maturity or experience changing in them. If this was an RPG, if this was like D&D or something, and they've got this big well of experience, they've got 50 XP to spend, they have not spent any of it. It's just sitting there and they're going, oh, I don't know what to do with it. And it's like, throw some in wisdom. Yeah? Yeah, let's get those cogs turning. No. They're like XP hoarders, but they're not doing anything with it. And it's frustrating.
Well, they're putting it into their elements. They're putting it into their elements a little bit.
Oh, my God. Other Kevin. Oh, I need to unlock this door. I know. I'll call a sprite. Fucking element of wind, goddammit.
That was terrible. Especially because he just learned that he has an affinity for all five elements. You should use it. Quit calling the sprites. But do you know what? Maybe when we learn later on that overusing old magic might not necessarily be a bad thing, maybe it wouldn't have been for other Kevin either.
I don't know, because other Kevin is very similar to Zoe. He's basically the other world Zoe without having that Zoe. Side note, I was very satisfied that other Zoe was murdered in a vicious, terrible, terrible way. It really...
I really did like that scene with her head talking. That was fantastic.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Anyway, I think other Kevin would have reacted in the same fashion. And I'm actually surprised he didn't start to get those aggressive tendencies that Zoe started to just from having the pendant. But the thing is with Neferet, she was already there. She was already angry. she was already pissed off with the world.
Yeah.
And she was trying to use to change the world at the same time as Lynette and wee Denise and, you know, all the people in the B&B in Scotland, like, started to change her attitude. And I think that's where the old magic couldn't take hold of her, because she was already angry. Her anger levels were up full. There was nothing that old magic could have latched onto. So the only thing it could do was to start fill up the other pot.
Also, the fact that she loved wee Denise so much. And then wee Denise became a sprite. So then she has wee Denise that she can call, who loves Neferet. So she's not going to force her to burn bones. She's not going to force her to do all of these terrible things that Oak would have done. So...
No,
I think that's a little bit of it too, that compassion and that relationship with wee Denise.
I agree,
started all of that.
Can I also make note that wee Denise was already morally grey, because she does overhear Neferet and Lynette planning Laurie and Blake's murder, and she's like, "You want some poison? I'll get me granny to get you some. What do you want?" You know, like, she's got a selection. She's just going to nip down, cross the border to Annick Gardens and go to the poison garden there and just get a selection of herbs and spices and say, what do you want? So wee Denise was already on moral grey ground, which is perfect for a sprite.
Yes. You have to be tricksy and
slightly
unhinged to be a sprite.
Exactly. And I think wee Denise was... I mean, they described her in such a manner that it's like, oh, bless her. Oh, wee Denise. Oh. In very sympathetic terms that she wasn't, she was a toy short of a Happy Meal. But I think wee Denise had a lot more about her. She was just probably more attuned to the old magic already. I think she grew up in that area and she knew about it. She believed in it. She, you know, the Isle of Skye is so prominent in her life that the magic couldn't help but already be infused in her, that when she made that sacrifice. Sacrifices can be rewarded to the person who has been sacrificed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And her reward wasn't to die, it was to transform into a sprite, which I think was probably the perfect result for her. And in the end, Neferet / Emily. Emily's got a family she needs, she's got that support network.
Yeah.
Can I put this down as like a kind of surprise / oh, God, I can't believe that actually happened.
Sure.
Well, I feel like we're in a bit of a hodgepodge of conversation here, and I'm loving this. I'm loving it. Do you know when Nyx, like, looks at Dallas and all of the other monstrous army, and she's like, oh, right, well, I'm going to give you a second chance as well. Poof, you're all 5-year-old again. Sucks to be you! Anastasia, you've got a bunch of
so bad
5-year-old humans to look after now. And then Anastasia's like, I don't know what to do with them. Do you want to take them back to your world, Zoe? Zoe's like, nope, I'm out.
Nope. No, thank you. What are they going to do with these children? What is going to come from that? Is there going to be a...
crash
daycare center at the House of Night? Because they don't have families anymore. You can't give a 5-year-old back to the 20-year-old's parents. No, here he is. Start over. You can't do that. What are they going to do with them?
They'd be like, ah. Do you know what? I think, forgive me, I can't remember the sister's name at the cat sanctuary. I think they're going to give them to her. Like,
do not
sister.
Give them to Sister Mary Angela.
Give
she
them
does
to sister...
not deserve that.
Give them to Sister Mary Angela, and she'll open up like the equivalent of a cat sanctuary for the children. An orphanage.
She's gonna open
she'll
up
open up an orphanage.
A cat orphanage.
A cat, but for children. So you can come in, you can, like, you know, play with the kids out back in the sandbox, or the kittens in the kitty litter tray.
No, oh my god.
I just think how absolutely harsh to revert them back to being 5. So they're going to have to go through all of that learning again. and go through all that hormone surge of being a teenager again. And then not all of them are going to get marked. Not all of them are going to change into full vampire. That's, you know, okay, I get that. But what did Anastasia do?
What did she do to deserve that?
And the only thing I can think of, she got it together with Dragon Langford. And we all know our feelings on Dragon Langford. Because that guy is an asshat.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Like, you want to be with Brian, do you? Well, have a squall of children. Are they called a squabble? What's the plural for that many 5-year-olds? A squabble?
I think
a
that's
nursery?
A tantrum?
A tantrum? A sticky? A stickiness of 5-year-olds?
A stickiness of 5-year-olds, yes.
Yeah. Oh, poor Anastasia. She out of everybody, Anastasia, was very hard done to in these books.
Yes.
No, no
yes,
justice
she
for.
Was.
Hashtag justice for Anastasia.
Yes. Oh, man.
So, you know, the rebel contact who Grandma Redbird has to go through their farm, the one with the terrier. Is it terriers?
Tina.
Tina the terrier farmer.
Yes.
Did you get, like, a distinct kind of personality vibe from her?
That Tina, the terrier farmer, is exactly PC cast? Because that's what I thought.
Yeah! I got those vibes as well. And I thought it was very delightful.
Yeah. Yeah, with her alfalfa farm and all, like, a sea of terriers. Yeah. Yeah. And she also, like, doesn't put up with any shit.
Yeah.
She's super smart. She's super helpful. It's PC cast. Yes. That's fantastic.
Did you, while we're on this weird vibe, did you have any surprises that we haven't mentioned yet?
No, not really, because the only one that really just sticks with me the whole time is that they didn't realize that there were going to be two Neferents. And, like, I'm not surprised by it, because as our conversation has clearly shown, they're not there yet. They're not mentally capable to grasp this. They're stupid. But yeah, come on. How do you not realize? How do you not realize that there's two Neferets? That's the only thing that really surprised me.
Yeah.
But it didn't. But it didn't at the same time.
Not even, like, the ending where the Neferet becomes Emily?
That was a surprise too, yeah.
Yeah, but not like that kind of verging on surprise. I'm surprised chapter 13 didn't go farther.
Oh, I know. It would have been so great. It would have been so great to get a sexual steampunk sexcapade, except for not steampunk, between Neferet and Lynette. It needed to happen.
Vampish, vampire, vivacious,
voluptuous.
Vectoring towards each other.
Yeah, that would have been a really good scene.
Yeah.
But now I wonder,
are they more sisters than anything else?
Yes.
Because
it upsets me.
Lynette is considerably different to Neferet now. Like, hasn't Neferet been made younger?
Yeah, she's been reset at Emily right as she's being marked. So 16, 17. And now Lynette is, what, 35?
In the books, she's mentioned as being in her 40s. Which she was like 40, 45. 40. And I placed her in her 30s.
Yeah. But that now, like, is it going to be like a parent-child relationship? Is it going to be like from Twilight? Where Jacob Black imprints on a baby and then he has, like, does vampire Lynette have to now watch Emily grow into an adult and then they can be together? What's gonna happen? Is it parent-child relationship? Are they sisters? Are they friends? Are they in a relationship?
I don't know. I think it's one of those...
What's going to happen?
It's certainly before she gets youthified. It's certainly implied that it could go further, but they are, like, the best of friends, the best of sisters. And it could go further if, the you know, this whole shit show was going on.
Yeah.
But then I'm also wondering, maybe it wasn't written down, and I would be interested to ask this to PC Cast. Is Lynette made youthful again so that she and Neferet can be on par? And it's the kind of question you would pose on the fan page, but it's so spoiler.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that on a fan page because it would give off the ultimate end to the book, and that is not fair. But
yeah, that's not fair at all. That's what we're doing here in this episode, and you can choose to listen to it or not.
Yeah.
Speaking, though, of PC Cast, is it time?
It's time. It's time. Breathe.
We've been waiting for this one for so long, and we're so excited because we have two very special guests. PC Cast and Kristen Cast are joining us today, and we're so excited! Yay!
Yay! We're so happy to be here!
Yay, thanks! Welcome, guys. We appreciate you. We're so excited to have you.
We're excited to be here. I'm happy to be back, too.
Yay, good. We loved having you the first time. Yes. That's one of our most listened to episodes.
Just stop being goo.
It's true. I have been goo for a very long time. It's just a slight obsession. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Really?
You haven't started stalking yet.
Not yet, right?
That you know of.
Okay. I wish people could
never rule these things out.
Oh, man. So,
as soon as the recording stops, she'll just be on the floor going, Mah!
I will.
True.
I might seem ridiculous, but this is as composed as I'm going to be able to get, and it's not very composed. But that's okay. It's only slightly embarrassing, but I'm okay with it. So, we have some fantastic Would You Rather questions that we want to ask you guys today. And the very first one, Claire, would you like to ask the first question?
Yes. We ask this as a general question across our social medias. Would you rather get vague ideas that something bad is going to happen, you're definitely right, but aren't really sure what to do about it, or get full-on terrible visions of what's going to happen, but afterwards you have debilitating migraines and your eyes bleed? So on Facebook, it was a straight up 50-50. On Instagram, 71% just wanted the vague ideas and 29% were quite happy with the eye bleeding. On Twitter, it was 42% for definitely being right and 59% eye bleeding. It's pretty...
That sounds like Twitter. That sounds
about
like
Twitter.
Well, that's just going on Twitter and your eyes instantly start bleeding. Yes. So Colin on Facebook said, I'll deal with the bleeding eyes, thank you very much. There's nothing worse than a nagging sense that something's going on, but you're not sure what. I mean, I'm like that all the time, but why make it worse?
I couldn't do the eye bleeding. I couldn't do that. That I don't want any of that. Thank you. I already have migraines, so no. I don't want any. I would rather have just a general sense of unrest, which anxiety provides me, so at least I'm familiar.
Yeah, you've already got okay, both of them. Just add in the eye bleeds.
I want the eye bleeding part because I don't want to live with a general sense of gloom and doom like I am right now. I would rather have something specific that I know that I can maybe change. And then I'll deal with the eye bleeding, much like Aphrodite does, probably with good champagne. And I prefer reefer over Xanax. I'm more of a natural girl. So I would do the reefers and the champagne. And I'd be just, it'd fix me right up. I'd be
no, fine. Phyllis, I don't understand. I can't, no. Yeah. I can't. Yeah. Why would you want to know exactly what was going to happen? I feel like, why is that a good thing? It stresses me out.
Well, but you could change it if you know what's coming.
If you've ever played the game The Sims.
Have I ever done that?
No.
They tell you to go to the toilet, or they tell you to go and cook, and then they cancel the action off, and the Sim just kind of just sits there and goes, I don't know what's going on. That's how I live my life. So if I've got this vague sense of unease, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to go with PC, and I'm going to have the full-on migraines and eye bleeding because I need to know. I don't want the action to be cancelled and be like, what? You know, I live with that day in and day out, so... You know, I'm not going to be as classy as Aphrodite, unfortunately.
It's so stressful to know that Peach, I just couldn't. I can't. I'm not with you. I'm abandoned ship. No.
You have, because I'm on the eye bleeding migraines route, too.
Ah!
I mean.
No. No.
Just going to do it.
That well, I can do this interview. I just can't.
Kristen is at one with her anxiety. She's at one with
it's my friend at this point, so I'm fine.
Oh my God, long enough, stuck around. See, I already have migraines. I had one yesterday, so might as well just keep them around. And you can take some artful photographs with bleeding eyes.
Oh my God.
Exactly, right? See?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, I'm sure. So
you just want to offer cosplay. You're just doing it for the cosplay now.
It's the only reason why I do anything. Just for the cosplay. The only reason. So we had a couple of other responses on social media. Constance on Facebook, and we have to share Constance's because Constance is maybe more of a super fan than I am.
Oh, good.
She said, I have a deep need to know everything. I just have to deal with the blood and migraines. I mean, I do that once a month anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's not wrong.
The blood is probably not from her eyeballs.
But, well, I'm with you, Constance. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. Michiel on Instagram. I mean, yeah, my head would hurt, but I would also know where my popcorn is going to be dropped. So I won't have to deal with the emotional pain of picking every single one of them up from the floor. Michiel is always hungry. Always.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Bless him.
One Hilda 5 on Instagram said, if my eyes go back to normal and there's no permanent damage, I'd do the second one. What good is having vague predictions if they don't help anyone? What a waste. So, okay. Yeah. So, Kristen, you're wrong, I guess, is what all of these answers are telling us.
You know what? No. If I'm defending these right now, I feel like I'm right and you guys are just confused.
You've got a vague feeling that you're right.
We're on different soapboxes. It's fine. We're on different soapboxes.
I have like a strong intuition anyway. So I don't know. I just feel like I just can't with the knowing for sure what's going to happen.
If you don't want the bleeding eyes, don't have the bleeding eyes. It's fine. It's fine. You don't have the bleeding eyes. Have that fake sense of unease constantly. And, you know, don't help save lives.
See, but I feel like none of you have ever watched any shows that have anything to do with the people, you know, the characters who are like, I can see the future and we're going to stop it. It does not end well for those people. It doesn't end well.
Like 50 books with Aphrodite being like that. Oh, and by the way, you guys, this sums up what it was like to raise Kristen. When she said, I feel like I'm right, and you guys are just confused.
Well, you know, we're all entitled to our opinion. Mine is just correct, I think.
Exactly. Let's try the next one.
Let's do.
Okay. Next question.
Yes, we asked this one on the House of Night Facebook group because that is the best group of people to ask questions and they all have the most wonderful responses. So we asked, would you rather be covered in tons of tiny little tendrils of darkness or wrapped up in two or three giant ones? And two or three giant ones got 72% of the vote and tiny little Tendrils of Darkness only got 28%.
Yeah, because okay, the tiny ones make me itchy.
See, I created the little tiny ones on Nephret because it creeps me out so bad.
Gross. No, I don't like
just
it.
Like her, and I remember I described it like it was like almost living fringe all over her. It just grossed me out. It's just disgusting. I will so take the great big fat tendrils.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially because I know what happens at the very end, you know, because I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And so I know what happens to those tendrils. So I take the big tendrils over the gross, swarmy, icky.
I don't like the little ones. I feel like they're just like tiny bugs or like roaches or leeches or something. And no, thank you. No, thank you. Give me the giant ones.
It's like that horrible feeling when you go to bed and you think, oh, I'm going to swallow a spider. This looks like this tiny tendrils going in your nose and your ears and your mouth and whoa. At least it's one. Gross. And you feel like you could like bat it away just a little bit. I mean, you can't because the tentacles of darkness and evil, but at least you feel like something of substance.
Right. Ah. Maybe they'd be warm, so at least you would be like cozy. Mm-hmm. All the time, whenever like the big ones, but just like two big ones, it could be like friends.
Shawl.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
A shawl of tentacles of darkness.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want a shawl of darkness. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You want to take over the world, though? No,
it's true. I do. I do want to take over the world, and I'll use my bleeding eyes to help me do that. We have any comments from that one that you think we need to share? I mean, the very first one that we pulled is yours. Oh, well, PC. The little ones grossed you out, so we know that.
Yeah.
There's lots of...
You did say that she thinks, like, it's having some big snakes on you versus little slimy bugs covering your whole body. So I think, you know, Chris really hit the nail on the head with that one.
Oh, Janine. Janine said little tendrils aren't as greedy and fill quicker. Plus, there's more of them to send on tasks.
Oh, that is a good point.
That's true. That's I mean, those are good points.
Yeah.
Good job, Janine.
Yeah.
Good job, Janine.
It does depend, though. Are you Nephret or are you a victim? Because if you're Nephret being covered in them, you're children, they're your babies. You know, they're not going to harm you. Take a little nibble now and again because you're feeding them. But that's very different to being the victim.
Yeah, that's bad. The victims are—it's bad. They go in their mouths. I created all that because it grossed me out so badly.
You did a good job.
Yeah.
In possession of, and then they come like bursting through their necks and stuff. It's just nauseatingly disgusting. Yeah, I really like it.
I kind of got the image from Supernatural where the demons go in and out of the mouths, and it's just like this type of smoke flick. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I imagined when. Oh, no, that's just not sanitary.
But if you were dealing with the demons from Supernatural, then you could have some people from Supernatural come and help you out.
Dean!
Can we have a day?
Ooh, no! Sam!
We need to have one day when Jared Padalecki is not raised up in conversation. Can we have one day?
No. No, Jared Padalecki is always around.
He's so terrible. He just, like... I mean, I love a man who cries, but every episode he does that little, he's like, does this like thing with his nose all the time. And then he like gets all teary and he's like,
the way he flicks his hair as well.
Yes.
Yes. I remember watching one of the seasons. So it was like, do not do the man teeth game because you will be absolutely plattered. By the end of one episode. So unshed mantis, take a shot. Unted mantis, take a hot shot. A hair flick, take two shots. I love Supernatural.
I've had yet to watch it. Kristen and I were talking, yeah, I know it's crazy. I don't know how I missed it. Kristen and I were just talking about last night that I have
got... Yeah, because I'm rewatching it right now.
Mm-hmm. You need to watch it. It's
I
just want to
start the rewatch too. Yes.
Yeah, yes. I need to rewatch too.
Amazing.
I'm going to start. I love me a show that has a ton of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what we hope.
And it's just all together.
That's what I want for House of Night is to have many seasons as Supernatural.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm.
And every season is this awful beast as well, in the literal sense, quite often. But then they have the monster of the week, but then the overarch. And mm-hmm. it's just so well done.
It is.
Well, hopefully, you know, you've got a million books and you keep writing more and they just keep getting better. So it should last forever, I think. Just going by your books. I think it'll go forever. Mm-hmm. And I'm there for it. Okay. So now I have questions that we did not ask on social media. What's our next one, Claire?
So would you rather have Kelowna stay good but never have Rephaim, or deal with evil Kelowna and all his evil consequences? So, good Kelowna, no Rephaim. Bad Kelowna, bad shit.
That's a really hard question, because I know people are going to say that we have to have Rephaim. I understand that. But Kelowna, bad Kelowna, did really bad things. I mean, he got Rephaim from raping women, and Rephaim and all his brothers from raping women. And I can't be a party to that if I can stop it. So I'm saying good Kelowna, and then just believing that the goddess is going to work out Stevie Ray's love life.
Maybe.
What about you? I'll co-sign for that one.
Okay.
That was good. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I just can't. I mean, this I love too. Evil, but sometimes it's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of evil.
And he did a lot of bad things. Yeah,
and it's not just him though. It's the Raven Mockers as well. His offspring have done a lot of bad things. So it's mm-hmm. not just him directly. Because even before, you know, he got with Stevie Ray and we started regaining his soul, him. You know, he was bad. He was really, really bad.
Yeah, and also remember that Rephaim was bad. He was real bad. I did not plan for Stevie Ray to fall in love with him. I planned for when she went out there behind the Benedictine nun's house and he'd been shot out of the sky during the ice apocalypse. I expected her to kill him. And then I'm writing it, and he opens his mouth and says something human. And, of course, Stevie Ray can't kill him. So I was like, oh, no, now what the hell am I going to do? Because he's a disgusting bird person. Bird I mean, person. If you think about it, it's so gross. Yeah. He's like a giant, creepy raven with human eyes and hands and legs. Mm-hmm. Ugh, it's just disgusting. And I remember I told Kristen, I was like, how in the hell am I going to do this? Because he looks so gross. And then Kristen had sage advice from my editorial staff mm-hmm. of one. What was your advice, Kristen Francis?
I said, to focus on his voice and mm-hmm. his people hands. And describe his voice and his people hands and leave out the bird part.
The eyes too, because he has people eyes. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice after that scene, like in the books following, before he gets turned into a human sometimes, there's very little creepy raven description because it's disgusting.
He's a bird person.
Bird person.
Yeah.
People hands and people feet.
Was it Rephaim in the Dragon's Oath novella? So you know the Sheriff Riddle. He's influenced by I'm confused. Rephaim. Amanda
so
doesn't
sad.
Agree.
Yeah, it was Rephaim down there. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You see this?
Thank you. I wish I put a bet on that now.
Yeah. Someone asked me that like a few months ago. And I automatically went, no. I went, no, huh? It was someone else. And then I started thinking about it because I wrote the book like years and years and years ago. And then I was like, oh, shit, I was wrong. It was Rephaim. And then I couldn't remember who asked.
I felt like it had to be because, you know, Anastasia essentially saves him and then he goes out and kills her. And it was like, it felt like it had to be. There was nobody else it could have been.
Yeah.
Also, he can speak in complete sentences, and the other Raven Mockers were not quite there.
Yeah, he's the only one. Although I do, I'm from that, from the fan page, the Facebook fan page, which is fantastic. And I love being active on that. They were asking me questions about the Ravenmachers, about his brothers. And Mizrock in particular, like the only other one who really could speak. And they gave me an idea for a lovely romantic short story.
Ooh, that is excellent to hear.
All I'm going to say about it.
Dang it. What more?
I don't think I answered this question, but I'm going to have to go with Good Kelowna too. I would be curious as to, in the other world, who Stevie Ray would end up with.
Yeah.
I would be curious to know that, so it's fine. But I do love Refiem, maybe almost more than anyone else.
I love Refiem too.
But anyway.
Would you rather live in the bed and breakfast before we do the sacrifice, or Neferet's Mior penthouse while it is still opulent?
Well, I love me some Isle of Skye. So, and in theory, I would already have a place in Tulsa. So, although I do really like the penthouse at the Mayo, I'm going to have to do the B&B on Skye though. Plus, then you get like Mrs. Muir, and you get Wee Denise, and yeah, you get all of that, the staff too. You get the staff. So yeah, I'm going to take that. Kristen, what would you want?
Well, I left Tulsa on purpose. So couldn't pay me to go back. The bed and breakfast before or after Wee Denise's sacrifice.
Okay.
That one.
What do you guys, what would you do?
I love a proper Scottish breakfast. A proper Scottish breakfast, not the haggis. I can't stand haggis. But if you've got, their potato pancakes are just absolutely divine. So I'm going to go to the bed and breakfast. I love a bed and breakfast.
Right?
I want the porridge with just the wee dram of single malt for breakfast. I love me some of that. Yeah.
I'm not allowed Scotch. Scotch makes me go crazy. Like, I stood on the top of the Royal Mile in Edinburgh after doing a taster session, and all I was doing was going, cheese! I went absolutely Fruit Loops, so I'm not allowed Scotch.
Oh, that's where I learned to drink Scotch, too, was right off the Royal Mile in Edinburgh as well.
We don't let Philip have Scotch, either.
Yeah, Kristen's grounded me from Scotch, too, for much the same reasons. Yeah. But I can have a little thimble. Just a wee dram, my God. It's just so
Just a dram. I've spent many an afternoon in the Scottish Whiskey Experience Cafe and just drank their lattes with the cream in. So they're nice. But I'm not like actual Scotch.
Nice.
No. And okay, you get the floats as well, so you can have the experience of all the different kinds. They're fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna join you guys at the bed and breakfast. We'll all be there together.
We'll have the best time.
We're gonna have a great time.
We really will.
Sleepover,
and then we can go out and skip rocks.
Yeah.
Into the lock. I will do it.
Sacrifice some things to the faithful.
Sacrifice some folks. Yeah.
We don't have to sacrifice people to the fae.
Make a weekend of it.
But you can.
I sacrifice Laura Blake to the fae.
Oh my gosh. In that same, would you rather live in this place or this place? Before we get to the last question, would you rather live on Grandma Redbird's farm or on Tina's farm?
Oh, that's easy. Tina is me.
Yeah,
and that
I
is
called
my
that
friend.
One. Yeah.
I wish you guys could see. I wish that everyone on the podcast could see Kristen just fall out at that. She knows. Okay. Yeah, no, that was my for real ranch. And Tina was what I called myself when I was a little girl. So I'm going right back to my ranch. I totally had it fixed up exactly how I wanted it. And the Ravenmachers live on the ridge behind me. So... yeah, I'm going there in a heartbeat, man.
Okay.
What about you, Kristen?
I'll go to Grandma Redbird's because I've already lived with my mother.
Right. One.
Try something new. And that's too many dogs, Tina.
What?
Yeah, too many dogs.
There's no such thing as too many dogs.
Oh my gosh. You've never been around. Well, as I said, I was going to say you've never been around barking Scotties as my dog upstairs is barking. But that many Scotties, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. They're like little aggressive cinder blocks.
They're exuberant. They're just living their best life.
They are living their best life.
They're doing it very bowl in a china shop.
The white bowl or the black bowl, though?
Well, I have both. White. So. I have white and black, or sweetened and black Scotty. So they're a mixture of both, I would say. They do love them some Kristen, too.
Oh, man.
They do. It's a lot.
But I can't imagine. She has four right now. I can't imagine like a whole farm full of them. That's a lot to go.
I can. It would be so fabulous.
He was already talking about getting like a little hairy wiener dog.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, you don't need.
You should. You should. You need a little hairy wiener dog.
Always, I'm in the process of.
If you have the space and the love, do it.
That is what I was in the process. This will sound super, super crazy. But I am in the process of having my beautiful sable German Shepherd, my Eastern European German Shepherd, who died tragically last year. I was already going to clone him. And when he passed tragically, I already had his genetic material stored at the lab and everything. And so I'm right now in the process of they're going through the process of cloning him right now. So I'm going to have at least one because
wow.
And he was 120 pounds. So at least one giant bear looking German Shepherd. And Kristen reminded me of yesterday when I said, you know, I haven't had a puppy for years. I should get one of those little hairy wieners. And she was like, yeah. And then she went, wait, no. As soon as you get one of those, you're going to get your shepherd pup, and they'll call you from the lab and go, congratulations, all four are yours. So, yeah. There is that. I like me some dogs.
I'm excited to see how that turns out. Can you keep us up to date with your...
Oh, yeah, I'll post
about it. Science dog.
Okay.
You don't have to pretend like it's normal.
No, yeah, it's not normal. I know it's not normal. So,
but. I would do it too.
That's why I like it. It's a science dog.
Yeah.
Well, I want to hang out on Tina's farm too.
Well, you kind of have to.
Oh, you want to go to Tina's farm?
You have allergy issues.
Yeah, I have an allergy to lavender. So
no.
So I have to live on Tina's farm regardless.
That's a real thing?
Of course it is, Kristen. Jeez. That's so unfortunate.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I can't hang out with you.
When you're around lavender.
I break out in a rash.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, no, it's not pretty. Oh.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun on my ranch. So my ranch is very cool. I even had standing stones brought in and put all over. Like, I used to do bonfires out there by them and like two-step around them, really kind of drunk. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay.
I've just got this image of being on Tina's farm and just lying there in the field and all the dogs just suddenly, you know, you'd see the clips of all the puppies attacking the little babies and just being all fur in the face and going, yes, I want to die by Labrador or Scotty dog, or just, yes, take me on the fluff. Lick me to death.
And that's how they are too. Ask Kristen.
How on
well, every time she comes to my house.
Yes, it's a lot.
Oh,
I'll be alone on the lavender farm. Fine. I'll learn how to meditate. It'll be great.
I guess that'll be good. I'm sorry that you're by yourself, but I can't come visit.
There's a very big difference between a lavender farm and a puppy farm in tranquility terms.
Yeah, it's not very tranquil, I'm sure, on the puppy farm, but it's a better place to be. So, last question. This is an important one. Would you rather live in Zoe's world or in Kevin's world?
Oh, Zoe.
Why?
Zoe. Yeah. Why, Kristen?
Yeah, I don't know that I want to go through like a human vampire war. It doesn't sound like a good time to me.
Yeah.
And that is happening in Kevin's world. And
it wasn't even resolved at the end of Found. They still have to deal with the ramifications of other Neferets bullshit. So yeah, I'm with Kristen. I want Zoe's world because I created it first and it's cooler. So, yeah.
I'm glad that's your answer.
Plus, Lenobia is in that other world. I really like me some Lenobia, and she's not in that other world.
There's pros and cons. There's pros and cons because in Zoe's world, there's Zoe, and she needs, in my opinion, a slap. But there's also Jack, and I'm sorry, I can't get away with Jack. He would annoy me so much. But then in Kevin's world, Heath's there, and Heath needs a slap.
Yeah.
But I don't have to associate with him because I'm at the House of Night. But then Stevie Ray is in Zoe's world. We don't know if Stevie Ray is in Kevin's world.
No, she died. She's in Kevin's world.
She died.
Oh. She died. She wasn't. Yeah, she's gone. It's a tough decision.
I don't know. What's your answer, Amanda? In case I need a copy. There's pros and cons.
I want to be in Kevin's world because I really enjoyed Found, and I want to live in that world, even though all the war shit is still happening. I am curious as to how that's going to turn out, and I want to be a part of the change.
Oh, that's nice.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should copy that one. That was a good answer.
You can copy that one.
So, plus one.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
Plus, be part of Kevin's circle. He hasn't established his full circle yet.
It's true.
He's part of Kevin's circle.
He doesn't have his nerd herd
yet. I really like Casey. I really like Casey. She's amazing. She's a fun character. I love her. So I want to be BFFs with her.
You know, when I created Zoe, I roughly based her on Kristen at 16. Not everything, but like some of her idiosyncrasies and you know, like she used to love Count Chocula and Brown Pop. And of course, Paschetti's, that's a whole family thing. And the Paschetti song is our family song too. And
what were you saying?
Yeah.
Are you talking about Casey?
Oh, Casey. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. I completely lost my mind. I was thinking about Paschetti now. I was like, ooh, noodles for lunch sound good.
Someone's hungry.
I had Paschetti for dinner last night.
But I actually, Casey, was created way much more like who Kristen actually is. And the reason I named her Casey is because Kristen's initials, KC. So she's much more, all of her rants about school being, you know, institutionalized jail for children and that, that's all Kristen. That is so Kristen.
Totally relate.
And ice cream shoes, those are
preach, Kristen. Preach, Kristen, preach.
I was going to ask if you had the ice cream shoes.
I do. Yes. I have those shoes.
Yep.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
That makes me happy. And I like Casey even more now. I know who she actually is. Yay. Yay. Oh my gosh. Okay. So that's the end of Would You Rather. All right. Thank you so much, guys. We love you.
Thank you both.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Thank you. Did you breathe at all? I mean.
No.
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 Mm-mm.
I mean.
No. So cool. It was wonderful, and we're gonna have to have them back a million more times because I love them both so much.
Well, they shouldn't be so productive with their books. Let's face it, if you're gonna write a million books, we're gonna talk about a million books, and you're just gonna have to come and talk to us as well.
I know. I almost feel like it's a little embarrassing how much I love them. But I'm also not embarrassed by it. I don't know. They were just so great, and it was so much fun talking to them. So make sure you go and listen to our bonus episode, too. It features the Would You Rather game and also just an excellent conversation with both of them. And it's kind of ridiculous.
It's just wonderful.
So you need to go and do it, okay?
It's
okay.
Just wonderful. It's just wonderful.
It is. It really, really is. Sorry, I'm like squeeing on the inside. It's fine.
You've turned into a puddle again. Did you get your huge jelly baby mold? You need your jelly baby mold for when you turn into a puddle.
I know.
Or at least a bucket. Just,
yeah, I need something to just ooze myself into after we talk to these people that I love so much. Oh, well.
And you weren't embarrassing at all. It was complete, like, you know, I'm a professional.
Good.
The squeeing was silent squeeing.
Silent squeeze. It was squeeze on the inside.
So cool. I just love that we're doing this podcast and we get to talk to all these amazing people. How wonderful is that? Really. And now, favorite final thought quote of the entire series.
I want to go with, you are powerful, your choices matter, and you matter. From Lost.
That is true.
And yourself?
I'm going to go with, joy isn't easy or inherent. It is a choice and not always an easy one. Not at first. From Forgotten.
PC Cast is really good quotes, isn't she?
Yeah. Yes. She's amazing in all ways.
If this writing gig doesn't pay off, you know, she could just do motivational posters.
She could.
Work for Hallmark.
I would buy them because I buy everything else that she does. All right.
Yes.
If you liked this, try this. What even else do we have to talk about?
Do you know what? I'm not even going to... We have episodes of the original series. Check them out. We have the novellas. Check them out. We have the Otherworld series, including this one, which has got a little bit meta. Check it out. And each one I said, read the Otherworld series, read the Fledgling guide, read the graphic novels. The artwork in the graphic novels is still, it's gorgeous, it's gorgeous. But there's only one book I've not yet told you to go read.
There's one more.
Nyx in the House of Night, Mythology, Folklore and Religion in the PC Cast and Kristen Cast Vampire series. And it's PC Cast is the editor on this. So there's a lot of... You know what? I'm going to just read an extract from the Goodreads summary. In Nyx in the House of Night, a two-colour illustrated companion to the House of Night series, some of your favourite YA authors plus a few experts help you navigate the influences behind the House of Night series in a guide that would get even Damien's seal of approval. I love Damien. Travel with PC Cast as she gets her first tattoo in Ireland, climb the ruins of Skiath Castle, and discovers the lore that led to the Isle of Skye vampires. Read Kristen Cast's Defence of Women in History and Mythology, who, like Zoe, have made a practice of juggling multiple men. Sit in on a vampire lecture by Brian Langford, the real-life basis for House of Night instructor Dragon Langford, on the parallels between Wiccan and vampire circle rituals. And two of Tulsa's House of Night landmarks with local Amy H. Sturgis. There's a lot of lists. There's a great list on Goodreads that tells you what also is included. Things like feline familiars, priestess and goddess worship, Cherokee heritage, raver mockers, and Kelowna's less than heavily inspiration. And like Nyx's comparison to other religions, particularly the Virgin Mary. So honestly, out of all of the books, I'm really tempted now to go in this for personal read and have a look at it to see what the inspirations are. I think it'll be very, very, very interesting. So I haven't actually read this yet. Have you, Amanda?
I checked it out from the library. I don't own this one. I checked it out from the library a long time ago. And I don't think that I read all of it, but I honestly can't remember. I feel like I have had it in my hands. So I had to have read some of it.
I would be very surprised if you haven't read some of it. It's one of these, I think it's probably like, for me, it feels very much like a coffee table book where you'd pick it up and put it down, pick it up. I've got a few of those. It's very, I'm interested in this more because I've got like a little bit of a collection of like feminist and female empowerment books, like the origins of certain characters, like specifically within like DC and Marvel and Doctor Who, you know, going down the nerdy route. And I'm really interested actually in this one simply because I think it fits in nicely with that kind of looking at the matriarchal society and the influences behind characters. And I like that. I'm the person who watches the Blu-ray extras.
Yeah, me too.
All of the Lord of the Rings extended edition extras. So Same-sies. That's why, yeah, that's kind of why I'm interested in that one. So yeah, that is my one and only recommendation for you from Found.
Can I ask you,
you may,
how you feel about the series in its entirety now that we have read the entirety of House of Night? House of Night, the novellas, the other world, how do you feel about it? Do you love it as much as I do yet? No?
I don't think so. Can I clarify around that?
Yes.
Okay, so
my level is oddly obsessive.
You're at 11, okay? You've turned the dial up to 11. I'm not there. But it's the same as with other fandoms where you are adoring it. I understand completely, 100% why people are obsessed with this. Because I've had similar obsessions over things previously and dived in there and other people have been like, why the hell do you like this? And I'm like, but... And then 3 hours later, they regret their life and their decision to ask me that question. I think this series, you either love it or hate it. I love to hate it and I hate to love it. And I don't mean to sound that in a horrible way. Because there's bits about it I just absolutely adore. And there's bits about it I absolutely hate. And I adore the two ends of the spectrum. And I have absolutely no idea if this is going to make sense. But I have enjoyed from start to finish talking about this series. And reading the books, I have enjoyed the entire experience.
Me too. Because so much. And I'm so glad that you did it. I'm so glad that you were like, yes, Amanda, finally we can talk about the House of Night series. I'm so happy that it happened.
I honestly remember messaging you and saying, oh, how would you consider doing House of Night? I read the first 6 years ago and I never got past it. And you were like, we're starting it next week.
Yay. So glad. So glad that it happened.
It's a passionate subject, but it's bloody good fun to talk about. And do you know what? And I say this with all the love of the world as well. The House of Night has the potential to have a very scary fandom. You know, you see some of these internet fandoms that unless you're a passionate fan and love everything about it, they will not let you through the gates. The House of Night will let you through the gates. And they will go, well, you didn't like that, but did you like this? Yes. Oh, it's fine then. You know, you can say there's something that you disagree with in the narrative or in the portrayal or something about the books, but you'll still get nothing but love back from people because they appreciate that not everybody is exactly the same. That not everybody's element is the same. But
do you know what, though? Do you know what is the same from beginning to end of this series? The only thing that matters is love. Always love. And they say it all the time. And that's what matters from this series.
Exactly.
And I don't have words. But I'm so glad that you read the entire thing and we were able to have these discussions on how many episodes now? 15? How many episodes do we have of House of Night? So many. But we always have a very great conversation about them. And I think most of the great conversation comes from the fact that I over the top love it and you don't quite. And I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah,
it's so enjoyable.
If we both absolutely adore something, we can't stop talking about it. You can tell we've got a lot of passion and a lot of love about books. And it very much comes through. And it's something you've always said to me is like there's a book for every person and a person for every book.
Every book its reader.
And that's one of the joys about making this podcast is not every book is for us, together or individually, but we can have a bloody good time talking about it.
Yes, we can. All right. That's enough. That's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss The Survivor by Bridget Tyler, audiobook narrated by Jesse Valinsky. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Look out for our next Would You Rather poll on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. And be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangove.redbubble.com. That's fictionalhangove.redbubble.com to find all your favorite Fictional Hangover themed merchandise. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.